Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for tuning in today. Hope to make it worth your time. We continue now with the rollout of the new WNYC New York Times collaboration called Schoolbook. It features stories, reams of searchable data on individual schools, content from Gotham schools and inside schools, those websites, and contributions by you, the parents, students, teachers, principals, and anyone interested in what's going on in the New York City public schools. As part of that, WNYC's Beth Fertig is joining us each week in September for a series of conversations about the city's schools and things being covered in these first weeks of Schoolbook. In addition to reporting on education for WNYC, Beth is working for this new site, schoolbook.org. You don't even have to go through our website or the Times website to get there. Parents and others, you can go to schoolbook.org. And today we're going to look at money. It's always tight, and teacher layoffs were narrowly avoided, but most schools are making do with less. So are you, as parents and teachers, having to contribute more? Beth? Hello.
Hi.
And we'll take calls on this at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But I know you've been doing some reporting on various pools of private money that come more into some public schools than others, and a lot of that is parents' money.
Yeah, and it's something that varies throughout the city because there are some communities, let's face it, where the parents can afford to chip in to help subsidize schools that have had their art and music programs cut. And so you'll find some schools where the suggested contribution per child is $400 at PS 40 in the Gramercy area, or maybe it's as high as $1,200 at a school in Yorkville where they ask the parents to chip in. And these schools are able to raise $100,000, $200,000 or more to help provide the types of services that other schools are struggling with. Although I should say that schools in poverty areas, low-income areas, they qualify for extra federal poverty aid. So the schools in the wealthier neighborhoods will say, well, we don't get that. We need to do a little extra fundraising. But as a result, they're able to bring in, you know, programs by the Met, they're able to bring in fabulous arts programs, or they're able to even hire teaching assistants who are graduate students that can be in the classrooms and help reduce the, you know, the impact of higher class sizes.
Listeners, how much do you contribute to your child's public school? How much do they ask you for? Have you ever been to the school down the road a piece that may have a different population, a poorer population, but is kind of in your neighborhood to see the facilities and the extracurriculars and the enrichment in comparison? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or you can answer the question on our Facebook page as well. Those have been coming up to us all morning since we posted the question. Shaffin writes, we contribute $500 directly to one of our kids' public schools annually. Jennifer writes, Beth, this will sound familiar to a lot of people. She says, let's see, $100 in Parents Association dues, $10 for water, supplies $50, annual auction minimum $150, fall fair anywhere from $30 to $200, various dances, talent shows $100 to $200, more supplies $50, food donated to class breakfasts or parent functions $30 times five or six, class pictures, a fundraiser, $30. Coffee of the Month Club, $25 a month. The art auction, $150 a ticket. I don't know what's, I'd like to know what school that is, but that's one parent being asked to contribute and really itemizing it for one public school.
Yeah, well, and then there's also the private schools will have their own fundraisers too. So
right, but if we assume that that's in a different category.
Yeah.
And we're comparing publics to publics. For example, in zip code 10023, as people can learn on Schoolbook, there's PS 199 on West 70th Street, Upper West Side, one of the most sought after and least diverse elementary schools in the city. And then there's PS 191 just a few blocks away on West 61st Street with 66% of the kids on the free lunch program because there's some project zoned in there. And I read no library.
This is the type of thing that happens. You know, schools have to make cuts. They may take their librarian out and put him or her back in the classroom because they had to let go of some teachers with the budget cuts. I've definitely heard of that happening this year. And this is what we should say, I guess, Brian, is on Schoolbook, because of this feature where you can search for the data about the public schools, you can do this yourself. You can go on there on the website, schoolbook.org, and you can put in the name of your child's school or a school in the neighborhood or even the zip code, and you can compare different schools in that zip code and see how they stack up in a way that compares their test scores, their poverty rates, their demographics, and it's really interesting what you'll find.
And you'll see when you go on the site a search bar prominently placed in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage of schoolbook.org, just like a regular Google search bar. And you'll be able to find and compare schools. You can search by school names, type of school, grade levels, borough. And then I guess from there, people can search particular qualities or particular issues and aspects.
Well, there's all of the data is provided by the New York City Department of Education and by the state. And Rob Gebeloff at the New York Times is the one who deserves an award for scraping the internet with a whole team of interns and assistants over the summer to get all of it in one place, because you can get this on the Department of Education's website, but it's not presented in a very clean fashion. You have to link to different pages. And so on Schoolbook, it's all in one site. But the thing that we're really asking parents to do is to go on there and to add your own comments about your school. And you do that by going through Facebook. It's not as hard as it sounds. Just go and try it. But we're really making an ask right now to go there and put your own comments up there. Say what you like. Say what you think is missing. Say what you think could really help the schools. And it really helps people get a fuller picture.
So we have some very interesting callers ready to go. Chris in Stamford, obviously not in the New York City schools, but with, I think, a very interesting solution or reaction to these disparities in private funding. Hi, Chris.
You know, we in the Greenwich Public School District, they have a gift cap that is limits the amount that parents can give to each school, and that we have 11 grammar schools in our district, and you know there is a cap per school so that you can't have the inequity that you know you're talking about.
In New York City, there is one way that the city limits the use of the funds is it can't be used to pay for full-time teachers. So it could be used for staff if they're after school or part-timers or teaching aides, but not for full-time teachers. So that's the one limit they impose on it.
Chris, thank you. Part-time teachers, okay. Yes.
Part-time teachers, after school specifically in most cases, or there's different ways that they can do it. And there was a little to-do a few years ago when some schools hired teaching aides that were not in the union. So they have to be unionized teachers, and they have to vet it through the principal. The principal has to go through it all.
So there's the cap for equity purposes. You can't give your child more money, in effect, because other children won't be able to keep up. Parents find that hard to swallow. Huge court battles are fought over things like that. The Abbott School Districts in New Jersey, whatever. But that's one way that they're doing it in Stamford. I wonder if it's a tension every year in schools for middle-class parents. Maybe this is another reason to consider a cap. You know, if middle-class parents see PTA dues as cheaper than private school tuition, maybe they wouldn't mind a cap either. Although even if you add up all the things that Jennifer posted on Facebook that we itemized and ticked off a few minutes ago, that's not going to approach anything like the, you know, $35,000, $40,000 you'd have to pay for a top-line New York City private school.
No, and as I said earlier, the schools in low-income neighborhoods that have high poverty concentrations get extra federal money to reduce class sizes. They get extra state money to do that. But the state money has dried up in recent years, as there have been budget cuts and there's been court battles over that. We could all name probably a few schools in well-to-do neighborhoods that for some reason have very high concentrations of kids in poverty because the parents choose to send their kids to another school in that neighborhood that has a better reputation. Yeah. For example, Park Slope. You know, there's a school, PS 321, which is hugely popular. It's been growing by leaps and bounds. And that school doesn't qualify for, you know, it doesn't have poverty kids. Maybe 10% are in poverty. Maybe two-thirds or more of those kids are white. It has really top-of-the-line test scores. But just a couple of blocks away, there's another school on 6th Avenue, I think it's PS 285, a Park Slope school, which is technically in a different district, even though it's just a couple of blocks away. Half the kids at that school are in poverty. Only 10% of the school's children there are white. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, how much of this is the parents' own self-selection? If all those parents decide to send their children to the school down the block, instead of some parents on that block will choose the Berkeley Carroll School, which is a private school that charges $35,000 a year because they don't want their children at the public school down the block.
And how do you even out those savage inequities? Martha in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Martha.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. I'm
a president of a elementary school parents association. We are PS 315, the East Village Community.
Oops.
Martha, did you go away? Martha? Martha once? Martha twice?
Okay.
All right. I don't know what happened there. Let's try Susie in Harlem. Susie, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I have two kids who go to PS 180 in Harlem, and it's really interesting to me, this whole idea of PTA suggested contributions, because when we first started at the school, and I don't think it's changed, we've been asked to give $50 as a family for the year, and I have friends in other schools in District 3, our same district, where they're asked to give $1,000. And I know for a fact, just like you've been saying, that there are assistant teachers in those schools that the PTA essentially has fundraised for. And our school, every year things are being cut. I know this year that we lost our full-time social worker, who is incredibly important in adjusting a lot of kids who had never been in school situations. We also don't have a librarian, so we have a great library, but can't really be used.
What do you think needs to be done? Do you want there to be a cap at the schools with wealthier populations so it's not so unequal? Or
definitely,
is that
because I think people flee. I mean, I'm in a sort of a gentrifying neighborhood, yeah. But what I found is that people are moving up here, but they're sending their kids further down on the west side because they're afraid of poverty and they're afraid of being in a school where the kids aren't, I mean, amidst the same socioeconomic class. So as long as that keeps happening, all the kids are going to be in the same pockets like you were describing with that Park Slope school. They're also going to go to PS 87 and PS 166, and they're not going to stay. They're just basically going to make these pockets.
Those choices. Right. Susie, thank you. Although, and Beth, we have 30 seconds left, but then the other side of the coin, I guess, strategically is if middle-class parents feel they can't even enrich their own child's education in the public schools, then more of the middle-class families will flee to the privates.
Right. And I was just going to add that data shows and studies show that consistently children from high-poverty backgrounds do better when they're in schools with a mixed population. There was a new report by the Independent Budget Office that just found that to be the case here in New York City. Test scores go up when kids are in schools that are not highly concentrated poverty schools.
And what's at stake? Well, so much is at stake. Another article on Schoolbook related to money right now. The Census Bureau released figures last week that showed the difference in median earnings between high school dropouts and high school graduates, and both of those versus college graduates, and the differences are so striking. A high school dropout might make $27,000 a year, a college graduate $57,000. All this information and more, and add to it at schoolbook.org. Beth Fertig, thanks a lot. Talk to you next week.
You're welcome.